Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. The less insane portion of the white American population got its wish. In a massive landslide among white voters, and still a too-big-to-rig majority, even if you include the votes of non-whites, they got the very questionable, Jew-connected and Jew-fawning Donald Trump elected. And he has now been inaugurated as President of the United States. Among Trump's positive qualities are that he, though loath to support whites in any way or even acknowledge our existence in vast contrast to his behavior towards Jews and blacks, still objects to the massive high-speed population replacement via importation program so beloved of the most rabid Jews and anti-whites. In the first few days of his administration, he, in accordance with campaign pledges, has sped up deportation flights of and proceedings against illegal invaders, who happen, of course, to be mainly non-white. Though Trump would rather gag on Roy Cohn's soiled sheets than take notice of that fact. Trump has dug deep and found lots of other non-racial reasons to slow down the invasion, mostly that they are destabilizing, a security risk, and are disproportionately criminals. Which they are, though Trump never admits that race plays a big role in that, too. He likes to imply that naughty Latin American leaders are purposely dumping their worst on us, which allows him to maintain the pretense that the races are equal, a must-believe tenet of Jew-ruled America. And I suppose that being of the generation before mine, probably Trump does have some nostalgia for the notably whiter America of the 1970s and 1980s, during which he was climbing the ladder of big success in New York City real estate. Even though the screeching anti-whites like to portray him as a racist and a neo-fascist threat to democracy, if only he were, really, he's just a liberal of the 1960s variety. He is therefore not a solution to our race's peril, and we have to continue seeking that solution ourselves. Another positive quality of Trump, and another reason why many in our Jew and Jewed elite hate him so, is that he really is a bull in the fragile china shop of their carefully crafted evil regime and fake supporting narrative. Neither they nor we know what he will do or say next. They don't like that. He's destabilizing. And we should like that. Without even meaning to, he's moving the slow minds of the American majority in new directions, emboldening them to think and say things that are actually in their own interests, and emboldening them to take positions closer to racial nationalism, even though I am sure that the Trumpster isn't even aware he's doing that. Annexing Greenland? Great for setting up nuclear missile batteries and over-the-horizon radar, I suppose, and maybe there is untold mineral wealth there that none but a few know about. I am sure that the Jewish grifters that surround Trump will take maximal advantage of that, if true, while Greenlanders and ordinary Americans look on in the usual daze of subject peoples. But do we really need another dependent non-white racial group who must always be catered to and favored and who we must pretend is equal to us? Renaming the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America? There's no substance to this, though it may appeal to people who still harbor some jingo-style rah-rah patriotism for the good old USA. Do you think it would have helped the Confederate cause if Jefferson Davis had made a pronouncement changing the name of Lake Erie into Lake Jeb Stuart in late 1864? To me and many others, it gives an impression of either delusion or grandiosity, and neither is worth 2 inflated cents. Renaming the highest peak in North America back to Mount McKinley from the Amerindian Denali to being once again named after a white man is cheering, but again, insubstantial news. But it sets a good tone. I do have some feelings about this, having been born just south of that impressive peak and loving the flawed but magnificent old America I grew up in. I was just turning 9 when LBJ signed America's death warrant in 1965, overturning the slightly pro-white 1924 immigration laws. But don't get too excited. I am sure that plenty of late Roman emperors issued pronouncements that sounded patriotic and made policies that seemed like a return to Roman greatness to their supporters, even as the doomed empire had passed the point of no return, rotted from within by Christianity and challenged from without by healthier, harder peoples. Trump did keep one promise promptly and effectively. He fully pardoned almost all of the imprisoned January 6th protesters, getting some really nasty backbites in the process. So I can't say anything too bad about that. But remember, these were well-meaning folks who were personally loyal to Trump himself. There are many political prisoners without that connection. Matt Hale, James Alex Fields, and many others. I was once one myself, and am still suffering some consequences of that. It's good that most J6ers and Ross Ulbricht, who set up a free market that couldn't be regulated by the U.S. or any other government and which bypassed the Jewish banking system, have been freed. But we should free 100 political prisoners every day, at the very least. Let's not forget James Alex Fields, in prison for 400 years for murder one, when no murder ever took place. He never knew and never saw Heather Heyer in his life, and his car never struck her. His car struck a second parked car, and then that car struck a third car, which allegedly hit her. Her being hit by anything has never been firmly established. 400 years. Let's not forget the others, many others, who have been persecuted and harmed because they were trying to defend their people and families from non-white aggression and violence, or simply trying to use free speech to warn their people of danger, or simply building privacy technology to help people escape the surveillance state. Except for Ulbricht, the subject of a campaign promise made at a Bitcoin conference during the campaign, Trump has said nothing about any of them. Nothing exemplifies the fake and instinctively grifting nature of Trump and his administration than his recent crypto initiatives. Faced with the reality of Bitcoin's rise as true freedom money, used in Canada and Ukraine and Russia and Lebanon and many other countries, it has already saved individuals and families from having their accounts frozen and their wealth confiscated, and as universal protection from the Jewish bankers' money creation inflation scam. Trump has joined many another member of the establishment in raising the white flag and taking a pro-Bitcoin stance. But as soon as Bitcoin started succeeding 10 years ago or so, a huge panoply of crypto scammers emerged, many of them Jewish, each with his own coin he wanted to promote. The way these scams work, in short, is that the insiders mint millions of coins for themselves. Hire social media influencers and a PR firm or two to convince the gullible that scam coin or fake coin or whatever it may be called is the next big thing. Sell the remaining portion of the coins to the gullible public and, when the excitement and prices reach their peak, sell off their millions or billions of pre-mined insider coins for a tidy sum, the price of which then plummets to near zero. The PR firm is paid a nice fee and then dismissed. The scammers buy a few Lamborghinis or condos in Limassol, and the dumb clucks are left holding goo-goo coins worth less than a medium-sized extra-soft roll of Iraqi dinars. Well, Trump has betrayed us all on this front. Not only is he buddy-buddy now with numerous scam coiners, including the Jew David Sacks, who has now been unofficially named as Trump's crypto czar, but Trump partnered with the new crypto coterie around him to scam millions of his own followers with a Trump coin, immediately followed a few days later by, if you can believe it, a Melania coin, the prices of which, as scam coins always do, peaked and then dumped as insiders pocketed their one-time gains. This is the exact opposite of what Bitcoin is about. This is betrayal, and it is very psychologically revealing. The work of the National Alliance continues. We must ensure that the fate of our race is at the forefront of our best minds. We must not get sidetracked by Trumpery, even if the chaos sometimes works to our benefit. As our chairman of the National Alliance, Will Williams, recently wrote in part, responding to the statement in his local newspaper that Americans no longer make enough babies to maintain the country's population growth, to sustain the country's economic growth, he wrote, quote, "Economic growth with 30-plus million, mostly non-white, illegal immigrants flooding our country should not take precedence over the quality of our population." I'll repeat that for emphasis. Economic growth should not take precedence over the quality of our population. The opinion piece says that Republicans have increasingly portrayed even legal immigrants as a negative force in American life. True. My wife of 21 years, Svetlana, a legal immigrant from Russia, has certainly been a positive force here in Johnson County. It cost us approximately $30,000 and 2 years of waiting for the Moscow University graduate and valedictorian of her high school class to be approved as an American citizen. So I have resentment when seeing the steady increase of mestizos into our country, ignoring with impunity the legal process, whether to seek asylum or to seek work that our white youth supposedly will not do. They are the ones who Donald Trump rightly stated last month are poisoning the blood of our country. That was a racial statement by Trump, because these millions of invasive migrants who do not migrate back to their home countries cannot make white babies, a biological fact. In 1965, bald-faced liar Senator Ted Kennedy, with his Immigration and Nationality Act, abolished the national origins quota system, which had favored immigrants from mostly European nations with similar heritage to America's founding stock, and opened up American immigration visas to the entire world. How has that worked out? Non-white immigration has grown exponentially to more than 9 out of 10 since Kennedy promised, "The bill will not flood our cities with immigrants. It will not upset the ethnic mix of our society. It will not relax the standards of admission. It will not cause American workers to lose their jobs." According to the Pew Research Center, in 1965, America was still 84% white. And I'll interject and say I've seen figures stating that it was by that time over 93% white. Presently, whites nationwide are under 60% and headed for minority status, unless unchecked non-white immigration is seriously addressed. Trump's executive orders to eliminate insane birthright citizenship, finishing his border wall, and placing military troops to defend our border from invasion will buy some time. Rounding up 500 criminal illegals in his first few days in office is a start, however, that leaves tens of millions of other illegals. Illegal means unlawful, forbidden by law. Do whites have the will to enforce our laws, to preserve our race? Probably not at this point. Close quote. That's the purpose of the National Alliance: to build the will among whites to preserve our race, and to organize a growing and unstoppable community to do just that. That purpose is as important as ever. A slight modification of the clown world of smiling evil by Trump is the opposite of a solution to our plight. It may make many whites feel complacent. And complacency means death. So Trump's victory is indeed a reason to redouble our efforts for the alliance.